and happy Easter, Passover, Sunday. You're listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Sam's off today, celebrating Easter. No, not celebrating Easter, celebrating Passover. No, not celebrating Passover either. Sam is off today, celebrating a Sunday off where he doesn't have to do anything. But you got me, Becky Friedman, in the studio with Justin. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well.
And Bridget.
Hi.
Hi. It's been a while since you've been in the studio with us.
It has. I'm really happy to be back.
So you guys aren't out celebrating your Easter Sunday at church or anything like that?
No. In fact, we got stuck in traffic because they opened up a school to do a church service.
Okay.
It was bizarre to me, but it's okay.
Well, you know, earlier this week, there was a church pastor who needed to actually make an apology, and it wasn't because he gummed up traffic too much in his neighborhood. A church in Pataskala, Ohio, made a public apology on behalf of an associate pastor who asked teens to spit on him, cut him with a knife, and slap him during an Easter lesson. The activity was meant to show what Jesus endured before his crucifixion, according to Christian tradition. Associate pastor Jadius Dempsey was joined by lead pastor Justin Ross in a video posted to Impact City Church's Facebook page, where they admitted that the activity was inappropriate for the audience and said the intention was just to show the teens how much Jesus loved them. The church's board of directors is now investigating. Guys, now tell me, who is the audience for this kind of thing? Anyone in a church?
I don't know who the audience is intended to be, but it's definitely not teenagers. I mean, I understand the intent. I remember something like that in my youth group years. It wasn't like spitting and cutting, but it was like hitting. And it was weird then, and it's weirder now.
Well, in this context, it was after he was spat on and sliced with a knife and slapped across the face. He said, "This is what Jesus endured." So aren't you then putting the children who are supposed to be worshipers of Jesus in the position of being an attacker of Jesus? I mean, even if you had been indoctrinated into this religion, which I think is just a weird thing in general and not something that I personally experienced, you're now forcing the children to be essentially the enemy of Jesus.
Yeah. This pastor was trying to put these kids in a position where they would have like the memory that they're not going to not have as they get older. They're just going to have this experience in their life now of their pastor with the spitting and the whipping and the knives against the back and all that kind of thing. These are kids are 12, 13 years old, preteens, some of them, 14 maybe, the oldest ones. And it's this strange way of, impart this lesson about how this was the suffering that you did to your pastor. So now you did the thing. And now you know what Jesus went through, and this is how much he loves you. It's a very weird way of going about trying to teach this lesson.
I suppose that I can be glad that it wasn't the other way around, where children were victim of these weird acts, right? Some of which would have been injurious.
Don't give them any ideas.
But, I mean, it's still traumatic to, like, be that person who is being told to commit acts that you wouldn't normally commit, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like, there was a quote from one of the children who participated in this that it made her feel very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
She said it was awkward and weird.
Awkward.
I love the teen language of awkward because it can cover so many things.
So many things.
Who knew that it could cover being asked to slap your pastor in the face?
Yeah.
Although, you know, now that I look back on it, I would like to slap one of the pastors in the face from my childhood.
Ooh, really? Mm. And would it be reenacting what Jesus suffered during the crucifixion?
No, it's just what I wish I'd done when I was a teenager.
More earthly concerns.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of earthly concerns, I mean, I think that this gets at two particular things where you have children that can be traumatized because now they have enacted the role of the enemy within the context of their particular religion. And then of earthly concerns, they've been told to hurt someone else. And they've been told in a context with someone that they should be able to trust.
By someone in a position of authority.
Yep.
I think that merely just going on Facebook and saying, "We're deeply sorry about this," isn't really enough. Like,
no.
You got to say, especially when they say, well, this was inappropriate for the audience. It was bad to do with teenagers, but the intent was there and the intent was good. I would wager that the intent of telling children to, you must understand what it's like to be beaten and cut and whipped. I don't think that that's good intent. I don't think there's intent there that's good.
Yeah, not even a little bit. This guy should definitely not be in a position where he's around kids, because obviously he can't be trusted to have good judgment. And where were the other adults?
Yeah,
in this church.
Apparently it was the associate pastor and the lead pastor involved in this.
Well, the lead pastor was in the apology video, sort of there with his, associate pastor that was like, yep, we're really sorry for this.
So, like, no other adult opened the door while this was going on and went,
well, at least whoa. One teen was capturing it on a phone recording and then uploaded it to social media, which makes me thankful, but also makes me wonder, how often does this kind of stuff happen, or had this stuff happened before the advent of easily accessible social media pocket phones, right?
Crazy Pastor Jadius at it again.
But I mean, not just in this church, but in lots of contexts.
Oh yeah, no, definitely something similar like this happened during an Easter service when I was 14, 15 maybe.
Yeah, when I lived in Florida, I remember seeing a guy, I don't know if it was related specifically to something like this, but I remember seeing a guy walking down the street or along the side of the highway with a giant wooden cross on his back.
Well, we know that especially in the Philippines, it always makes the news every year because folks in the Philippines who are very, very Catholic elect to sort of do the Stations of the Cross in a similar way. And some even, crucify themselves in an effort to try and understand what Jesus sacrificed according to their particular tradition.
This is news to me. Democracy, Jesus? What?
So, yes, I guess so. But that's someone of their own accord, of an adult mind, electing to do this to themselves.
Right.
This is not a group of preteens, of junior high school students, being told do this because Pastor Jad says so.
If this is his kink, sure, go for it. But there are places that you can go and do the thing in a consensual way, not in front of children.
Well, he said that this is to show the teens how much Jesus loved them. I think he's doing a little projection here.
A little bit. Uh-huh.
Yeah, a little bit of a messianic complex there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and if you want to prove in this particular way how much you love someone else, that's fine. Just, again, not with teens.
Not with children.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Consensual adults, right? Consenting adults,
yep.
Right? So it's not only Easter this week, but it's also Passover. And as someone who had spent many, many years celebrating Passover in both an observant and a little bit more radical manner, there's something that I wanted to share with you guys. And Justin, you're here usually for the politics segments. And here's where we get a little bit political this week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because Republican Jewish Coalition Chairman Norm Coleman replaced God with Donald Trump in a reimagined version of a traditional Passover chant as he introduced the president at the RJC Leadership Conference 2 weeks ago. Traditionally, celebrants at a Passover Seder sing the song Dayenu, which means enough, to say that it would have been sufficient had God only done one of the praiseworthy acts attributed to him. In his speech, Coleman listed the series of Trump's actions, after each of which he enjoined attendees to shout Dayenu. Praiseworthy accomplishments, according to Coleman, included tax cuts, moving the U.S. Embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, putting two conservatives onto the U.S. Supreme Court, pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal, rolling back regulations, and praying at the Western Wall.
Shows you about how highly they think of their God.
I guess so. This was really shocking to me that this would be celebrated in a Jewish context, especially in what ordinarily would be a conservative, more conservative leaning Jewish context. Because, I went in all different circles, Jewish circles, growing up, but mostly progressive up to radical, feminist, egalitarian, all those kinds of things. But when you think of like the Republican Jewish Coalition, you think they're going to have conservative values overall. And this Norm Coleman guy, he actually used to be senator, in Minnesota before. What's the comedian guy?
Al Franken.
Yeah. Before Al Franken. Essentially ousted him. And he switched over to the Republican Party in the 90s because he's anti-abortion. So you'd think that these Republican Jewish individuals, which, would have conservative values to the point that they would cross over into their religious values as well, that they would be more into like conservative or Orthodox Judaism, where they replace the place in the song for God with the president? That seems incredibly sacrilegious, even from the perspective of an atheist.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's all sorts of weird going on there.
It's very fun when deeply seated values can be so fluid.
Well, they're fluid because Donald Trump apparently is good for them in terms of...
I have no idea. I have no idea. Maybe they feel so strongly, so positively strongly about the U.S. embassy being moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem that they're willing to overlook or look past the other part of people who really love Trump with the whole Jews will not replace us thing marching through Charlottesville. Maybe they find a way to see past that. I don't understand it.
To have a Republican individual who is supportive of Trump, but also Jewish, for something other than all the things that he's doing in Israel, I find it hard to sort of reconcile all of those particular things. And this speech of Dayenu, you know, we in my college years and whatnot had used Dayenu to have new verses, right? But we always still attributed it to God. Say, if... you know, we had made this particular move towards social justice, you know, it wouldn't have been enough. And we kind of flip it on its side that way, that we need to have everyone cross over into freedom and liberty, and not just particular people, and not just celebrating the destruction of, you know, particular people and things like that.
An atheist at that time when you were doing that in college?
No, I was not. I was observant in a very sort of like... weird pantheistic but essentially Jewishly informed way. So
there anything that you saw in your personal experience coming up during that time in the your Jewish community that was leaning towards this kind of thing?
Because it seemed certainly
like
not
one direction, and this what's his name, Norm Coleman guy, went a completely different direction with that.
I doubt that Norm Coleman would have been comfortable at our Passover Seders at Smith College, right? This is a very like radically feminist, liberal, all women's college. And Seders were really fun. Not least of why was because you actually are commanded to consume 4 very full glasses of wine throughout the evening.
In my one Seder with you and a couple of other people a few years ago, I remember very little of it, but there was a lot of alcohol.
Well, you're supposed to sort of kick back. You sit on pillows as if you are royalty because you are no longer slaves. It's sort of a night at playing at being a grand rich person who has all the freedoms in the world.
So Dayenu is supposed to be sort of like a celebratory song. Almost.
It's definitely a celebratory song, and it's definitely a song where you celebrate and direct that celebration and praise towards God. Because in a traditional context, God would have freed you from slavery. God would have liberated you from all of these things. And then subsequently, God in the Jewish tradition would have given you all these things like the Torah, which is the Hebrew Bible, would have given you all these particular things like the land of Israel. And here, Coleman is literally saying the whole context is the same, except Trump is the one at the top. Trump is God. And if he had only done this one particular thing, it would have been enough. But instead, he did all these miracles for us, and we praise him so tremendously.
Sort of the same thing that's happening on the evangelical Christian side is also happening on the Jewish side and the conservative.
Yes, I'm glad you pointed this out, because we've seen places like Michelle Bachmann saying Trump is the most godly president that we've ever had. And for those of us that are looking at Trump's actions and then trying to square it with, you know, any kind of religious text,
or trying to square it with reality,
right? We're kind of a little dumbfounded, you know, chin hit the floor kind of thing. It's not just in the evangelical Christian circles where we're seeing this deification of Trump.
I've heard the phrase shocking but not surprising, and I think that this is shocking but not surprising. I don't think Norm Coleman or Michelle Bachmann were decent people to begin with. I think they just tried to paint themselves in this religious context, and now that they've got their guy, now they can actually pray to their golden calf.
Well, I don't know if calf is the best animal comparison I have for our current president, but we'll see about maybe a different kind of animal we might come up with. You're listening to Ask an Atheist. We'll be back after the break. Hello and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Sam's off today, and I got our serious music on because we've got some real serious stuff. Bridget and Justin are here to help me sort through this.
Hello.
Because this came today just as we were getting ready to put together our show. More than 200 people are dead and scores more injured after coordinated bombings racked churches and resort hotels throughout the island nation of Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday. The first attacks occurred at churches during Easter services in Colombo, Negombo, and Batticaloa. Subsequently, blasts at four separate hotels injured and killed dozens. A final series of bombs exploded at a private home as police questioned occupants about the attacks. Police state that the explosions appeared to be suicide bombings and that while they made seven arrests, no group has claimed responsibility as of this broadcast. The government has blocked Facebook and Instagram and instituted an island-wide curfew. Now, I realize I haven't paid much attention to Sri Lanka at all. We've looked at occasionally sometimes there's some blasphemy sort of things that happen there where someone who is of a minority religious group, you know, is barred from publishing their book and things like that. When we talk about the kind of blasphemy laws and things like that, but nothing in the last 10 years of relative peace that Sri Lanka has experienced would seem to rise to the level of sort of religiously targeted bombings and things like that. So it was very surprising to me.
Yeah, it's always devastating when you have such a quiet country. I mean, they've had their turmoil. They're trying to rebuild after their civil wars. So for the last 10 years, it's been relatively quiet. And then to have something like this, yes, I am not a religious person. I am not going to be part of any sort of Easter services, but people should be allowed to worship the way that they want to, when they want to, in safety. You know, they shouldn't be afraid to go into their place of worship. And so, like, when you have a country that has such a low demographic of Christians, like only 7.5%, 82% of that is Roman Catholic. When you have those people who are suddenly very afraid to go to their place of worship, it's just devastating. My heart goes out to the people of Sri Lanka. It's so sad.
I wasn't really aware what the sort of makeup of Sri Lanka was until I looked a little bit closer. And what do we find, Justin?
We've got 70.2% Buddhist, 12% Hindu, 9.7% Muslim, and then 7.4% Christian.
So that seems relatively pluralistic. I mean, definitely a Buddhist majority, but sort of strong numbers of folks, you know, in these different demographics.
Yeah, as of now, we don't know who the perpetrator of this attack was. We do know that some people have gotten arrested, but there's no news coming out as far as what organization, if they were part of an organization, and what motive there was behind it, and whether they were specifically trying to attack Christians or if they were just trying to make a big splash. It seems like they were specifically trying to attack Christians, but there were also hotels that were attacked as well.
You might also imagine, though, that even within a religious context, lots of times when you have a major holiday, folks will use that as a vacation time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and especially as Sri Lanka has ended their civil war 10 years ago, they've really been able to market themselves and market the island and the nation as a tourist destination. I mean, it's beautiful. It's in the, you know, Indian Ocean, lots of beaches and things like that, resorts, and it's a beautiful place. And so the hotels might be folks that are using a holiday time
mm-hmm.
to then use that as a vacation place.
I would also say, I mean, we won't be able to get into like the motive behind until we find out more about that. However, in order to pull off something like this, an operation like this, there are certain logistical things that need to be put in place first. And that takes time and manpower and organizational efforts and supplies to put together to make something like this possible.
This is not just a rogue individual being disgruntled about something.
This isn't just a guys woke up one day and all just decided to go do this thing with all of the dead and injured that they managed to affect here. So my question is, with the amount of time that would take logistically to set this kind of thing up, is there not an effective police force in this country in Sri Lanka?
I don't know anything about the police force in Sri Lanka. I did see that about a week and a half prior to this, there was a security memo that was circulating suggesting that there might be attacks.
Is this not what government is there for?
To protect its people? I think it is. I think it is there to protect its people. You know, we also want to note that there were three police officers that were killed in that final bombing as they were questioning individuals.
Fundamentally, this is what the state is supposed to be used for, to protect its people regardless of the motive for hurting them or the religious background or anything like that. It's supposed to keep its citizens safe.
I think also as we look to what is the purpose of the state, we can't forget that there have been some ultra-nationalists in Sri Lanka that have been associated and affiliated with a particular branch of Buddhism. And so when you look at what should the state be, there are ultra-nationalist Buddhists. They're part of this Buddhist power force that are also looking at what the state should be.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that it's from a remarkably different perspective than we as secularists and atheists would
and if the
believe the state should
force,
be.
If the Buddhist power force wants to use the power of the state in order to have this ultra-nationalist view coming and reigning over the rest of the citizenry of Sri Lanka, someone should point out to them that they're missing the entire point.
Yeah, do we know what the response was by the police force when they first got the notification or put out the security brief saying that these attacks were possible? I mean, do we know?
I'm not sure at this point. I'm sure that it will be unfolding, though.
Yeah.
I'm sure there will be intense scrutiny both internationally and within the country itself.
And it's probably fair to say that it was insufficient.
Yeah.
Well, I believe if it was sufficient, then we wouldn't have 200 people dead and eight different places bombed to hell. You know, one of the things it also brings to mind is that lots of times in the United States, we have folks that don't necessarily follow a religion. They're not associated with any particular thing, but they don't call themselves atheists and they don't necessarily even call themselves secular. And they'll often say, well, I use teachings of Buddhism to inform my life. There are secular humanists that do this as well.
Oh, yeah.
We can't forget that there are different sects of Buddhism, of Buddhists, who are very violent and who use these religious differences to motivate separatism, to motivate violence. Now, again, we can't say
the perpetrator is of this attack.
We can't say that the Buddhist power force is the one that's in charge of this particular thing. But we have seen Buddhists in Burma be very violent against other minority groups. And it's a thing to keep in mind, I think, for folks that are kind of like, we talk about apatheists, right? They're not an atheist. You're not a theist. You're not a particular religious person. Ah, it just doesn't matter to me. But I like Buddhists. They're cool. You know, Dalai Lama, he's cool. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Well, there might be things behind that particular religion or the way that it's practiced in different places that are very disagreeable to your morality.
Yeah. I mean, when you get a group of that's large enough, you're going to have the people on the extreme sides one way or the other.
Good point.
And so it's like, yeah, I really like these tenets of Buddhism, but I don't like the way it's practiced by this particular sect or whatever. So if you make this broad general sweep of, oh, I like Buddhism, it's okay, you're ignoring that there is still extremism on that side as well.
Yeah, specificity is important.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't have the attention span to do the research necessary. There's a big sort of a social push, I guess, towards just having Eastern religions all wrapped up into one thing. I've heard people call themselves Buddhists and then have Hindu imagery.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there is a really interesting sort of interplay between the two belief systems. They definitely influenced each other.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're talking like, I like this particular statue and I'll put it next to my prayer flags and my incense, you're kind of all combining and essentializing all philosophical beliefs and cosmological beliefs and religions as belonging to the Orient.
Don't call them religious. Call them spiritual.
Yeah. Right. I think that's something also to sort of take account of in your own particular beliefs and practices. And say, where does it really come from? And if you're laying claim to that, and you are laying claim to being a part of that particular belief, you know, get educated on it. Certainly, if you like something, if you like a teaching from one thing, and you want to incorporate it into your morality in life, that's cool, right? Stay educated on who and what you associate it with.
The people who committed this terrorist attack definitely need to be brought to justice. Actual justice, not court, you know, have their due process of law, have the society, have the necessary application of the due process, and then have it investigated so that this can be learned from and not have it happen again.
Absolutely. I think that we'll be keeping an eye on this. I think the world will be keeping an eye on this.
I certainly hope so.
Going a little bit, well, a lot closer to home. Do you guys know that there was, have you ever been to Leavenworth?
It's a beautiful town in central Washington that has sort of a Germanic tone to it. They have a great Oktoberfest. Yes.
Okay.
It's quite beautiful.
Did you guys know that there was a particular conference this week?
No.
The Clorox Church, right?
Oh, no.
Clorox is a brand name, and we don't associate this church with a specific brand. I don't want to sully the name, dirty the good name
of Clorox.
Of Clorox. But a fringe religious group that believes drinking industrial bleach cures 95% of all diseases held a conference this Easter weekend in Washington's resort town of Leavenworth. Genesis 2 Church of Health and Healing asked attendees to donate, in quotes, I guess, donate, right? $450 per person to be granted church membership, samples of miracle mineral solution, which consists of chlorine dioxide, and the knowledge to heal diseases. The FDA warns that the solution cannot be sold for human consumption and causes nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, severe dehydration, and possible life-threatening reactions. Police were present during the seminar at the advisement of concerned individuals who phoned from around the country, but they made no arrests.
I'd like to point out that the knowledge to heal diseases part of this, they sell this, they talked about it as the miracle mineral solution.
MMS.
And they sell that in part A and part B. So functionally speaking, cutting through all the BS, the knowledge to heal diseases part of that is just how to mix part A with part B.
I once had an oral mouthwash that had to be stored in two different containers. This is after I did my my wisdom teeth extraction.
Yeah.
And they said after that, okay, so here's two bottles and put these two things in and then swish it around in your mouth and spit it out. Don't swallow it. Nor was the thing provided by my dentist miracle mineral solution or industrial bleach.
No.
The scary thing about this is that the practitioners of this particular, huckster religion, and I'm going to call it a huckster religion.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. The
it's
practitioners
like
of this
pyramid scheme and then one part religion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the way that they're able to sell this particular thing, they're not selling the solution because the FDA doesn't allow you to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
They sell and ask for a $450 donation to come to their hotel. And then they give you this as like a goodie bag prize. No, they're selling these things. They're selling industrial drain cleaner. They're selling hydraulic fracking fluid.
Yeah, sodium chloride in one bottle and then citric acid in the other bottle, which then combine to make chlorine dioxide.
It's toxic to humans. And so here's the thing. Of things that really are toxic, this is one of them.
Yeah.
The founder of this church, I looked into him a little bit. Did you guys find anything about him?
Yeah, a little bit.
So his name is Jim Humble. I love that when ABC did a little series on him in 2016, they called him Jim Humble in name only.
Yeah.
So he actually camps out in Guadalajara, Mexico, because he's not under the purview of U.S. jurisdiction there. So he's a former Scientologist. So just jumping from one crazy to another.
Mm-hmm.
He claims that he is a billion-year-old god from the Andromeda Galaxy. Okay, all right, you with me so far? So he claims that he found the solution in the jungles of South America.
What, at a fracking site?
at a hydraulic fracking site. He also claims, I didn't study medicine, I'm not a doctor, and I'm proud of it.
Is he being humble by saying he's not a doctor, or is he being not humble by saying he's proud of being not a doctor?
I think that's literally just his name.
Okay.
At the seminars, the idea is that they tell you Jesus heals you while you drink it.
Yes.
You know, in high school, I did have a guy say, if it doesn't burn, it's not working. Maybe this is the same mindset.
Yeah. We've gone away from just spraying hydrogen peroxide on an open wound because, yeah, it does burn. It's also literally damaging the exterior cells.
Yeah.
Right? There's much gentler ways to wash something.
Yeah,
well, I just learned that today.
I ran through bits of the website, as much of it as I could tolerate. And the way that they talk about people, like the people who are trying to convince them not to use this solution.
So like us?
Yeah. The way that they personify us, or the skeptics of their MMS, reads kind of like a Trump tweet. Where they talk about haters and how sad and dumb they are. And it's just like, and there are weird quotes.
Well, I'm not drinking bleach, so.
It's like there's weird quotes through things or around things that shouldn't be quoted. There are capital.
Oh, do they use like quotation marks instead of italics?
And yeah. And like they put things in all caps that are like really.
Haters with their science saying it burns your throat.
it's kind of terrifying how these people are getting away with it. I mean, one person was arrested and sentenced to 4 years.
But not at this particular one. In general,
in their church.
This is a weird thing. So you have the people who are making money off of the faith, the ignorance of their followers. It's my opinion that the people at the top of this church should be the ones who are getting like prosecuted for their fraud. But I kind of feel bad for the people who, and I feel bad for saying this, but if this operation continues to be successful, this problem is going to take care of itself. Like we don't have to convince them. It's like, okay, you want to do your thing? Go right ahead.
But they're doing it to children.
Which is a problem.
That's the problem.
Which is a problem.
I mean, this is going to have lasting effects. If it doesn't kill them right away,
again,
it's going to weaken their...
adults making decisions.
It's going to weaken their immune system. It's going to cause kidney failure. I mean, the one thing that does actually like protect you against toxins is your kidneys and your liver, and this damages your kidney and your liver.
So Mr. Humble had actually said in the past... He had stated that MMS cures most of all diseases. The list of diseases, you were on the website. Did you see which things they supposedly cure?
HIV, measles, malaria, all sorts of things.
They said all cancers,
all
right?
All cancers.
They also said
somebody who said that they took this MMS cure and then coughed up a tumor.
A tumor.
And yes. I'm like, I had a mental image in my head. And I'm like, I don't think that was a tumor, Beth.
That was actually one of the archbishops, one of the co-founders of Genesis 2.
How do you get to be an archbishop in this particular church?
Well, okay, so you start out as like a healer and you get access to this MMS, right? And then once you've cured 10 people, you can become a bishop.
So once you've sold this to 10 people.
Yes, then you become a bishop and then you move up the more people you so-called heal.
Sounds legit.
Sell to.
Yes.
Okay, all right. So Mr. Humble actually said that. He says, today I say that MMS cures nothing. And he's like very proud of this particular thing. He says, MMS serves as a tool to kill pathogens and oxidize poisons in the body, which allows the body to heal the body. We live in a toxic world, and we are fortunate to have MMS, as well as various other important health tools to combat the ill effects of poor foods and chemicals that make us sick. You know what chemical makes you sick?
Bleach.
Drinking bleach. That will make you sick.
Just let the irony of that statement hang in the air for a second.
Oxidization isn't necessarily a good thing.
It oxidizes poisons in the body.
Right. So typically when you oxidize something, like, say, metal, you get rust.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an oxidized water solution, it tends to create bubbles.
That's hydrogen peroxide, right?
Yeah. Okay. And that's not generally...
Again, the burn. Spray it on your cut. It burns.
It's not generally a good thing. It's not something you want in your blood.
Well, that's
bubbles
why people
is not
are...
a thing.
Certainly, that's why people are going crazy about antioxidants. You want to stop the oxidation because that's kind of part of the natural aging process of cells.
And does bleach... Is there even anything to suggest that bleach would oxidize a poison?
Oxidize a poison? Well, if he thinks that, like, a cancer is a poison, yeah, it'll oxidize the cancer along with the rest of your cells in your body.
But, yeah, like, that's another thing. Cancer isn't a pathogen or a poison.
Yeah.
So cancer is your own cells gone haywire.
You're expecting way too much of Mr. Humble here. I did note that...
As we should.
I did note that the page on the website that actually was advertising the Easter weekend seminar has been taken down. It's not findable right now. So.
Oh, interesting. When did that happen?
Sometime before broadcast today and sometime after Friday. So maybe sometime during the actual ceremony.
I wonder why. Probably a totally reasonable reason for that.
Absolutely.
Nothing to see here.
I'm sure it had something to do with their haters online being rude.
You know, I am glad that police were present because they were there to watch if, you know, anything illegal was happening. But here's the thing. They kind of got their hands tied because if a consenting adult wants to drink a cup of bleach, like if they're not being coerced to do so, and they say that it's part of their religious sacraments, which that's what they say.
Yeah.
The police can't stop them from practicing their quote unquote religion.
Would it not be if there was outside just on the streets, if there was a police officer who saw a mother giving her child a drink from a bottle of bleach?
You'd be doing harm to a child.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
so definitely. What's the difference?
If there were children present and they were being coaxed to consume this particular thing, I would imagine that there would be individuals that would be arrested for child endangerment.
Yeah.
I hope so.
So one of the other things that this so-called church does is part of your membership, you get a card with your picture on it that is your ID into the church, and it exempts you from vaccinations. It prevents you from having to do like any sort of medical procedure that you don't want, like say an x-ray or an MRI or anything like that, scans and like going through the airport, going through like a TSA scan, it would exempt you from that for religious beliefs.
So where I can see this really coming into play is as more and more states limit personal exemptions from vaccinations in order to send your children to public school, more and more people may get around that by using a religious exemption. Mm-hmm. Because for some reason in the United States, because we've said that religious liberty is more important than your personal morality because it's somehow group endorsed, we grant more privilege to that. That's just embedded within our history and our Constitution. And we can see in some places where, personal exemptions from vaccinations have been eliminated, we do indeed see more and more people seeking out religious exemptions and religious clearance. So why not just pay $450 to a charlatan and then say, I'm no longer personally opposed to this. My religion says that I'm opposed to this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because you'd have to be really dumb to drink bleach, right? So maybe these people aren't actually dumb enough to actually drink this bleach, and this is just the product, their sacrament. That's why they call it that, but it's bleach, because nobody would be dumb enough to drink it.
Well, I imagine.
And it's just for the exemption thing.
The website adamantly declares that this is not bleach.
Well, and they want it to seem legit,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, they go into a lot of detail, a lot of pseudoscience detail, mm-hmm. to show that it's not, in fact, bleach.
Or to prove in a court of law that this is a deeply held religious belief.
Exactly.
Very interesting.
So, things to really keep an eye on, and I'm glad that this got worldwide and nationwide attention. I'm glad that there were concerned individuals that called the sheriff and said, you know, you need to keep an eye on this and make sure that no children are being harmed or that no individuals were being coaxed or forced to do this against their consent. Mm. I would see that you might be able to, if you got one of these church members to, after the fact, be able to sue them for fraud, I think that that's a way that you could definitely, you know, put a dent in sort of their business practices that, in my opinion, they hide under the guise of religion from a, you know, loony guy that thinks that he's a billion-year-old god from the Andromeda Galaxy.
One of the other things on the website is like the things that you have to do to be a member of their quote-unquote church is to do good deeds. But then it also says that the good deeds are for the doer, not the recipient.
That's really contrary to what many religions and secular humanism even say.
It's because it feels good to do good things. Therefore, you should do the things that feel good to you. And that's an act of doing good.
Oh.
Does drinking bleach feel good?
So a good deed might be to, do the things that generally we consider to be abhorrent. But since it makes the doer feel good,
it's an act of
becomes a religious deed in their book.
I think it was a sales pitch. Honestly, yeah.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Well, sales pitch, I don't know how much different it is from a lot of other kinds of religions and religious practices that we see in a lot of ways. You're listening to Ask an Atheist. Maybe we'll come back with something a little bit more upbeat and a little less bleachy? We're back. I lied. Not upbeat. Because there's just too many hard things going on in the world. I'm going to go take us to Oklahoma. You ready, Bridget? You ready, Justin?
I'm ready.
Oklahoma.
Yeah, again, not upbeat. Because a 45-year-old Oklahoma woman has been charged with felony and misdemeanor counts of malicious injury to property and misdemeanor malicious intimidation or harassment after terrorizing the Oklahoma City area with violent, racist, and anti-Semitic notes and signs. Prosecutors considered charging Allison Johnson with making terroristic threats, but found that current statute requires that an individual commit acts of violence to intimidate a civilian population in order to be charged. Johnson allegedly targeted two Democratic Party offices, properties in Chickasaw Nation, two public schools, and an arts center with messages that included "gas the Jews," calls to hang African American schoolchildren, swastikas, racial slurs, and, wait for it, Trump 2020.
This is my surprise.
Shocking. Chase.
Charging documents allege that Johnson revealed that her intention was to scare Jewish and non-white people. Additional charges may be forthcoming because her spree covered at least two counties. Well, I'm glad that there's probably going to be other charges, but I'm kind of alarmed that she's only charged with felony and misdemeanor counts, right? These are like, yes, felonies are bad, but it's like injury to personal property. They couldn't actually nail her for making terroristic threats. And that was something that, I mean, these seem like cut and dry terroristic threats. You made them. You said you called for African-American school children to be killed. This is a terroristic threat. You are terrorizing groups of people. So absolutely. What's the problem here?
Absolutely. It's a failure of the current statute in Oklahoma. So, As you said, it says requires that an individual commit acts of violence to intimidate a civilian population in order to be charged with making terroristic threats.
So it's like if you just make the threats, you can't be charged. But if you make the threats and then carry them out, you can be charged with the whatever violence comes from it plus the making the threats.
The terroristic charge.
But
is the terrorism has to have a demographic that you're targeting with a sort of a political means to it, and that's the big umbrella, capital P political,
right?
Not specifically like politics.
So my question is, she destroyed property in this, right? So isn't that technically an act of violence? Like in a domestic violence situation, if there's evidence to show that they punched a wall, that is evidence to support violent acts.
I guess not in this case in Oklahoma.
The easy response to that would be that it would be easy to point out the hypocrisy of if there are left-wing protesters or like Occupy Wall Street protesters who will break windows in a Starbucks. One of the common criticisms with that will be like, oh, it's domestic terrorism, it's violence. Look at how violent they are. They lit a trash can on fire, that kind of thing. However, in Oklahoma, they might have a different standard because every state has different standards. They might have a different standard where the violence has to be towards an individual or a demographic of individuals in order to be charged that way.
Which this was.
Well, if you're just coloring on a sidewalk, apparently it's not considered violent enough.
Yeah, it's the legalistic distinction between an inanimate object and the animate human being.
And, you know, it's easy for us to think, well, this is Oklahoma, there are a bunch of rubes, or this is how everything is in those areas of the country. And we here in Western Washington, where we're so enlightened, you know, we don't experience any of that. It would be very easy for us to say that.
You're not going to tell me that's not true, are you, Becky?
I'm going to tell you that's not true, Justin, because...
Oh, man, it's not them, it's us.
A 20-year-old man from Monroe, Washington, who operated at least 7 social media accounts espousing white supremacy and violence, has been charged with 2 counts of threatening to bomb or injure property. Dakota Reed had been using several Facebook accounts over the past year to propagate hateful messages and terroristic threats against Jews, public school children, and non-white individuals. Sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Taking cues from Alison Johnson or from, I don't know, our current ethos, our current rhetoric.
Any number of individuals in the last 2 years?
Yeah, so he boasted of his KKK membership. He referred to himself in videos as Active Shooter 327, and he threatened to pull a Dylan Roof. In reference to the white supremacist teen who murdered 9 African-American churchgoers in South Carolina. Police actually seized 12 firearms, laptop, and paperwork espousing white supremacy from his parents' home back in December. That was the time that he was arrested. And when questioned why he targeted Jews in his threats, he claimed that he'd been lied to by Jews, that girls liked them over him, and that a Jewish person once had gotten him fired from a position. Reed, who has been out on $50,000 bond since December, was arraigned on April 18th.
So you see here the 2 counts of threatening to bomb or injure property. That indicates that there's different laws in Washington that would make the threats of the bombing to injuring of property looks at it more in line with the way the Oklahoma laws should be, rather than the way the Oklahoma laws are. So Washington's laws are a bit better than Oklahoma's laws, and that's how they got this guy with the charges that they got him on.
On the other hand, he's been out free waiting for his April arraignment, right? He's been out for 4 months. This is a guy who literally said, as opposed to the Oklahoma woman, said, I just wanted to scare them. He said, I don't like them, and I targeted them. And had specific threats to emulate other attackers, other terrorists, other shooters.
Specifically Dylan Roof.
And the reason that he had this, I mean, the ones where he said, I want to be Active Shooter, he was emulating not just Dylan Roof, but also the Sandy Hook shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a guy that had specific people he emulated, specific plans he wanted to emulate, and specific reasons why he wanted to target these individual people. Now,
and 12 firearms.
The mm-hmm. fact that I'm an atheist has no bearing on whether folks like this decide to categorize me as Jew. This is someone who literally would say, well, your people once got me fired from a job, so I'm going to target your people. This is a guy that's been out for 4 months that literally could be targeting me.
Yeah.
And so while in Washington, we're charging him with the threat to bomb, that's a chargeable offense.
Yeah.
He's been out for 4 months.
Yeah. He's out on bail.
I mean, there are probably some knowing our justice legal system, I can't call it a justice system, but knowing our legal system, there will probably be some court ordered mandates on how he can act, what kind of, if any, social media he can have access to.
Conditions
things like
of
that.
Release.
Yes, thank
home
you.
Home monitoring, that kind
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Probably a probation officer that
probation
he
officer
has to check
in.
Into
especially
regularly.
With this being actual violent threats.
Yeah.
And I don't see a reference that he had plans, but he certainly had ideas.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a distinction there, that he didn't have articulated plans to do this.
The other thing was that Jewish girl or girls like them, Jewish people, more than me, that is definitely a men's rights activist type thing to say.
He absolutely sounds like an incel.
Absolutely.
We've seen this in the manifestos of mm-hmm. various shooters who target individuals because they think for some reason people from a demographic that's not mine are getting all the ladies, mm-hmm. or they're getting all the goods, or they're getting special treatment, or they're getting special favors from the government. We see mm-hmm. this in the militias that take it upon themselves to detain asylum seekers.
Right.
You know, where you see
they're
people from this
detaining is a legal term. They're kidnapping people.
They're kidnapping people.
Thank you for that clarification. They claim that they are detaining asylum seekers and waiting for, you know, Customs and Border Patrol to show up.
Kidnapping doesn't look good on a resume.
And but these are folks that are convinced that someone other than them from some other group is getting things that they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we can say this is only in Oklahoma, or these are crazy militia people in New Mexico, or this is someone even close to home. Well, that's Monroe. Mm-hmm. That's far away from Tacoma or Seattle. It's not very far.
It's not that far.
And if you look even close within Seattle, within mm-hmm. Tacoma, within Olympia, within Vancouver, within Portland, you will see folks espousing these things and sympathizing with these individuals.
Oh, absolutely.
It is not enough these days to simply acknowledge that there are bad people with bad ideas in the world. You need to know where they are in your communities because they are there.
Mm-hmm.
You need to pay attention to them when they're espousing these kinds of views. And you need to pay attention to the people who they want to victimize and let those communities know that you're helping keep an eye out, helping to try and keep them safe.
You know, I work in downtown Seattle, which is probably one of the most liberal cities, right? And yet there was a thing a couple of weeks ago where people were putting up flyers promoting this KKK rally in Seattle.
Yep.
And not only were they putting up these flyers, they were putting razor blades on the back of the paper so that people who were tearing them down were getting cut.
Like, I think that once you find that, that would definitely qualify for causing injury and harm,
right,
to intentional harm to another individual.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that's
so
in Seattle.
What's a way to fight back? What's a way to fight back against individuals? I would say strengthen your communities. I would say
your neighbors.
Rainbows
are the best.
Rainbows bring people together.
Unless you're...
And if rainbows don't bring you together, you are not the kind of person you want to be around anyway.
Well, rainbows would be a perfect way to fight back unless you're a junior high school student in Wyoming, because students at a Wyoming junior high have been told by teachers not to wear rainbow colors, carry rainbow flags, or have pro-LGBTQ messages in order to avoid causing disruption from anti-gay students. Students in the school's Gay Straight Alliance had increased their LGBTQ pride gear in response to racist and anti-gay flyers that had gone up around the school. Not just the community, but the school. The district released a statement clarifying that gay pride gear is not banned district-wide, but verified that the junior high teens were told that rainbow flags and LGBTQ-related clothing could not be used to incite other students. The district added that the Confederate flag and swastikas are indeed banned district-wide since they are symbols of hate.
It's difficult for me to see anything other from... As I said, the junior high teens were told that the rainbow flags and LGBTQ-related clothing could not be used to incite other students. It's hard for me to see that as anything other than a wink and a nod to the gay panic defense.
Saying it's your fault for inciting other people. When other people see your rainbow flags, they get so freaked out that they are incited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the gay panic defense, it's a really tough part of our history that, you know, folks should look up. Mm-hmm. And I think it is a wink and a nod, knowing or unknowing, to that. When you say that your mere presence as someone who is wearing a rainbow, as someone who is sticking up for marginalized folks, as someone who is fighting back against KKK flyers, is inciting, it's incendiary. When you say your mere presence, it's like when atheists put up a billboard that literally just said atheist and say you are hurting the feelings of others.
Right.
And these kids were told by teachers, you know, hey, you know how badly you felt when you saw those racist messages? You wouldn't want to invoke that feeling in others, would you?
As opposed to the Confederate flag of people who were literally traitors to this nation.
Literally traitors to this nation. And hey, when you hear Confederacy, you think Wyoming, right?
I mean, or the KKK, who are literally domestic terrorists who were preying on people who were newly made citizens of this nation.
Yeah. And well, let's compare this rainbow flag or a pro-queer t-shirt that says it's okay to be gay, right?
Wasn't the pride flag started as a way for the gay community, for something for them to rally around so they didn't feel alone?
The strengthening of the community thing that you were talking about. But let's compare that pride flag to, which could hurt the feelings of these Confederate kids so much. Let's compare them to the flyers that went up around the school. How about, it's great to be straight, but not okay to be gay? You know, I mean, as someone who isn't gay or who isn't LGBTQ, that would make me feel incredibly uncomfortable because I know that there's folks there that would be specifically marginalizing my friends and my community. You know, I mean, totally equal to a rainbow flag, right? That's just, a rainbow flag is too triggering.
It's yeah.
Why did they make it rhyme?
To be jaunty? I don't know. How about Black Lives Matter only? Because if Black Lives only matter because if it weren't for them, who would pick our cotton? This is the kind of thing that apparently is being equated to a rainbow flag, Mr. Principal or Ms. Science Teacher or Mr. Reading Teacher. I think you need to look closer here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good that the Confederate flag and swastikas are being banned district wide. It's the people who are talking about these two things in the same breath.
But
as if there's an equivalence between them, that are the problem.
The enforcement isn't there, though, because these things were happening before the kids came in with their pride flags and their pride emblems, and it wasn't enforced until that happened. So the kids with the Confederate flags and the KKK stuff were getting away with it once the kids started to
fight back, essentially, fight back, in a really positive manner.
In a positive way, just by making their presence known, by showing an emblem that means something to them as a symbol of positivity and community, that's when they all got shut down.
They're the ones that are targeted. I think that what it really shows is there will still be people, even when you're building and strengthening the community, even when you're having outward symbols of inclusion of marginalized people and rejection of hate symbols, there will still be people that are in their sort of death rattle, you know, cries for keeping things separate, for blaming others, and for working against that kind of community and unity. Justin, Bridget, I want to thank you guys for joining me today on what really is kind of a difficult episode. You know, this has been Ask an Atheist. You can find us online at atheist.radio and email us questions at atheist.radio. Find us on Facebook at Ask an Atheist WA and Twitter at the same place at Ask an Atheist WA. Justin, Bridget, happy Easter, guys.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter. Happy Sunday.
We'll see you next week. We'll be right back.